An Osho Talk. The Original Man. Talks on Zen, number one.
Basui said, imagine a child sleeping next to its parents and dreaming it is being beaten or is painfully sick. The parents cannot help the child, no matter how much it suffers, for no one can enter the dreaming mind of another. If the child could awaken itself, it would be freed of this suffering automatically. In the same way, one who realizes that his own mind is Buddha frees himself instantly from the sufferings arising from ignorance of the law of ceaseless change within the six realms. If a Buddha could prevent it, do you think he would allow even one sentient being to fall into hell? Without self-realization, one cannot understand such things as these. In a dream, you may stray and lose your way home. You ask someone to show you how to return, or you pray to God or Buddhas to help you, but still you can't get home. Once you rouse yourself from your dream state, however, you find that you are in your own bed, and realize that the only way you could have got home was to awaken yourself. This kind of spiritual awakening is called return to the origin, or rebirth in paradise. It is the kind of inner realization that can be achieved with some training. Virtually all who like Zazen and make an effort in practice, be they laymen or monks, can experience to this degree. But even such partial awakening cannot be attained except through the practice of Zazen. You would be making a serious error, however, were you to assume that this was true enlightenment, in which there is no doubt about the nature of reality. You would be like a man who, having found copper, gives up the search for gold.
Anand. Vasui is apparently right. But there are possibilities that the enlightened man create devices for the unenlightened. It is certainly one of the most impossible jobs to talk to a sleeping man or to enter in somebody's dreams. But I say that Basui is only relatively true because I constantly enter into your dreams. There will be many witnesses for it. He is saying, imagine a child sleeping next to its parents and dreaming it is being beaten or is painfully sick. The parents cannot help the child, no matter how much it suffers. for no one can enter the dreaming mind of another. There is no need to enter into anybody's dreaming mind. By chance, Ananda is here instead of serious Manisha. The parents can do at least this much. They can tickle the child. No need to enter into his dreams. Just wake him up. Existence manages so beautifully that Manisha is absent by chance. And the right child is sleeping in front of you. And you can see, not only I can tickle her, the tickle spreads all over. Even the children of the neighborhood will be awakened. That's why I say he is only relatively true. As far as I am concerned, he is not. I have tickled people. I have entered in their dreams. I constantly transpass because you love me, you trust me. What is your trust for? If I cannot transpass, if I cannot interfere into your dreams, what is your love for me? There is no point to be here at all. If I cannot help in some way to awaken you. So always remember, there are relative truths and there are absolute truths. Vasui is saying a relative truth. Ordinarily it is true, but only ordinarily. For an extraordinary master to create devices which can waken you up is just a playful game. Because what are your dreams? Just imagination. What is your sleep? Just a little cold water thrown into your face and the sleep will disappear. Just the master has to be aware who is prepared to receive the gift. The device gratefully. But relatively it is true. Nobody can enter into your dreams, into your sufferings. You have to wake up yourself. It is a very difficult task to wake up yourself. The enlightened person cannot wake you, and Vasui is hoping that the sleeping person will wake himself up. Not much chance. The sleeping person will go into another dream and another dream. Even his waking will be a dream, just as the awakened person's sleeping is a waking. The sleeping person's waking is also full of dreams. Just close your eyes and you will see dreams floating. You are engaged outside, so they keep standing by the side, waiting for you when you are finished with your work. But you dream day and night continuously. You can change the names, you can call imagination, fantasy, dreaming, but these are names of the same stuff that is not there, but you project it. Vasui says, if the child could awaken itself, it could be freed of this suffering automatically, obviously. But the problem is how the child can awaken itself. In the first place, in his dreams, there is no dream of awakening. He has never seen the awakened one. He cannot even dream of a Buddha. He cannot even dream a dreamless state. How he is going to awaken himself? It can only be accidentally, not automatically. I take note even of simple words one may ignore. He is saying this suffering, he is freed automatically. I have my objections. First, anything that you are freed automatically, you can be fettered again automatically, because it was never in your hands. Your slavery was out of your hands. Your freedom is also out of your hands. And automatically is not the right word to use in the world of consciousness. In the world of consciousness, things can happen spontaneously, but not automatically. Perhaps Vasui is not well versed. He is a man who knows, but he is not the man who can express the inexpressible. He is trying his best. I say a child can awaken accidentally. For example, a rat runs over the child. And for example, the child is Anandu. Do you think what will happen? An explosion in Lao Tzu house. And the rat is not concerned with your enlightenment, but you will become enlightened. At least for the moment. And then you can go to sleep again. Anything from outside can disturb your mind, and your dreams are nothing but your mind. So it cannot be said a child can be freed of the suffering automatically. Once in a while it has happened that the child has come to the end of dreaming and is fed up with the dreaming. The child is just only a symbol for a sleeping humanity. Everybody at a certain moment is going to get bored with what he is doing and how long he is doing. Even in sleep, and everybody is in sleep with open eyes, because the sleep does not denote your ordinary sleep, it denotes your spiritual sleep. You are not aware of yourself, that is the meaning of sleep. But how long? It depends on your intelligence. If you have no intelligence at all, then you never feel boredom. Boredom is the measurement. Just watch a buffalo. You cannot find in the whole earth a buffalo that is bored, or even have thought about what is boredom. It has not come across the consciousness of the buffalo. In humanity, only the very highest intelligences like Jayapal Sartre, or Jaspers, or Martin Heidegger, or Soren Kierkegaard, suddenly outburst with a new idea which humanity has never thought about, and that was the idea of boredom. That man's real problem is boredom, and he goes on avoiding it. He goes on hoping good days will come, that the night will be over, that sooner or later there will be a sunrise. But as far as boredom is concerned, it has been gathering since eternity. Only very few intelligent people who can be counted on 10 fingers around the world who have touched the sense of boredom And particularly, the people who have created the philosophy of existentialism are based on the question of boredom, that man is so bored that except suicide there seems to be no exit. Dostoevsky's Brothers Karamazov, one of the most important, perhaps the most important novel that has ever been written. One of the brothers, it is a history of three brothers Karamazov. One of the brothers is an atheist. Another brother is a very devoted theist. The atheist brother says to him that, listen, if by chance you prove to be right and you meet God, I don't believe that this is going to happen, because there is no God in my conception. But you insist that there is God, so do at least a little service to your brother. Just ask your God that my brother wants to get out of this existence. You have bored him enough. Suicide seems to be the only exit, but not a very brave, not a very courageous, but looks like an escape. In existentialist circles, that has been a continuous problem, that if we feel that suicide is the only thing, then we should commit suicide. And the answer was always that, who knows, after suicide things may be even worse. We don't have any chance to comparison. We don't have any alternatives. We cannot come back if we commit suicide and then we think, my God, what I have done. This is far bigger a hell that I have entered. Now there is no going back. So we cannot live peacefully, we cannot die peacefully. It is not something new. In the West it is new, but in the East, as far back as we can see, the question has been asked. But the question has taken a totally different turn. In the West, they think how to get out of this boring anguish, what we have been told that this is life, In the East, we have also thought about, but not going out of it, but going beyond it. That makes the difference between Western existentialism and the Eastern existentialism. In the East, there never existed a school particularly, because every seeker was seeking a beyond. More life can only dispel the boredom. More radiant life, more vibrant life, more eternal life, the Western existentialism seems to be defeatist, a failure, that this life is not worthwhile, that the only way is to jump in a lake. But you should be aware that the whole East, in its long history, which is longer than the West, has never thought suicide as a solution. Because life continues. By suicide you simply miss a great opportunity of transcendence. Every master in the East has been against suicide. Because if you are so ready to commit suicide, then why not try a jump beyond life? You have nothing to lose. At the most, it may be a suicide. Meditation is a jump beyond life. It is not getting out of life. It is getting at the very center of life, and the people who have entered at the very center of life have shown such grace, such beauty. Such presence that even they have become a tremendous inspiration for millions. Just their very presence has transformed people. The question is not of a time, but of understanding. Everybody can be freed from nightmares, from sufferings, from miseries, but of course not directly. The problem is that directly you cannot be freed from your suffering, because you are clinging to it. It is not the suffering that is the problem. It is you who are clinging, which is the problem. You don't want to leave it. You brag about it. You talk about it. You even talk about how to get out of this misery. But one who has eyes can see you are clinging to the misery as hard as possible. Just the presence of a master can help you to see whether the misery is clinging to you or you are clinging to the misery. That is a very decisive point. Once you see that you are clinging to the misery, you are freed. Just the seeing of it, the very understanding is freedom. Looking deep into your minds, you will find how you are clinging. Somebody 10 years before has insulted you, you are still remembering it, as if it is something precious. In fact, it was his problem that he shouted and was angry. It was not your problem. If you had simply remained a watcher, there would have been no scratch in your mind about those 10 years. And whenever you see the person, the scratch becomes deeper. All that is needed is to pass through life as a reflecting mirror, not as a film of a camera. The film of a camera catches hold whatever is reflected in it. That is its function. But the mirror also reflects, but it never catches it. Things go on passing, the camera goes on filling with new pictures, reflections, the mirror remains empty. To remain empty in this world, not holding to anything, and you have entered into a new field of energy, which is your own, just you have been neglecting it because you were too much occupied with unnecessary non-essentials. In the same way, one who realizes that his own mind is Buddha frees himself instantly from the sufferings arising from ignorance of the law of ceaseless change within the six realms. If a Buddha could prevent it, do you think he would allow even one sentient being to fall into hell? He is making common sense statements. It is true, if a Buddha could prevent, then not a single human being will fall into the hell fire. But that does not mean that the Buddha is not making every effort But the problem is that you are also involved in it. A Buddha cannot disturb your freedom. If you want to go to hell, he will simply show you the path. Out of compassion, he will make it clear to you that what the hell is, do you know? But if you are bent upon to go to hell, it is an experience. A Buddha, anyone who is awakened, without any effort, creates an energy field. It is not right to say that he creates. He finds an energy field spreading around himself, that whoever is touched by that energy field will not be the same again. He will start changing and transforming in a miraculous way. Even sometimes in spite of himself, he will do things which only a Buddha can do. His old habits, his ignorance, his unconsciousness, all will be against it. But the feeling of a Buddha, his presence, it may be a very slight experience, a very small flame, but it is enough to dispel the darkness of millions of years. Don't think that it is small. Just one evening's meditation, if you really touch the inner center, is more powerful than all your ignorance that you have lived for centuries, is more powerful than all your habits, is more powerful than all your personality. Just a single flame, and slowly it becomes a great fire, in which all that is false is burnt, and only the pure gold remains behind. Without self-realization, one cannot understand such things as these. In a dream, you may stray and lose your way home. You ask someone to show you how to return, or you pray to God or Buddhas to help you, but still you can't get home. In a dream, whatever you do is part of the dream. It is a very mysterious realm. You can have in a dream another dream. For example, in a dream you think of your girlfriend. You go to the girlfriend's home and you find that she has gone to see a movie. And you go to see the movie. And you are surprised that you and your girlfriend both are playing a part in the movie. A dream can be very complicated. You can dream that you have come home and gone to sleep in a dream, and you are dreaming. A dream within a dream within a dream is possible. Just it needs a very unconscious mind. You can also dream meeting a god or meeting a Buddha, but your gods of dream and your Buddhas of dream have no value at all. They are still dreams. Good or bad, when you wake up, you know. You may have been a great king or you may have been a beggar, it does not matter. When you wake up, both have disappeared. In a dream, you may stray and lose your way home. You ask someone to show you how to return, or you pray to God or Buddhas to help, but still you can't get home. Once you rouse yourself from your dream state, on this point, he has no explanation that why you should rouse yourself. There must be some causality. Otherwise, dreaming can be so sweet. A man was telling to his friend that last night, my God, what a dream. I went on fishing, and such big fishes. I had to carry with difficulty one fish at a time to my home. The whole night I was fishing and fishing, but the fish were so big and huge, you should have seen. It is a dream of the centuries. The other man said, this is nothing. Last night I dreamt that Sophia Loren and Merlin both are sleeping on my bed and I'm in the middle. I thought, my God, I'm a poor man. And I have never thought that such a great fortune, Marilyn Monroe on one side, Sophia Lorena on another side. The other man became angry. He said, you say you are my best friend. Why did not you call me? He said, wait. I did call you. I immediately phoned. Your wife said you have gone fishing. Your dream world is just a reflection of your real world. You cannot wake up without any particular device that is being created for you. Once in a while, a person comes to a point that he is fed up of everything, dreaming included. But that happens very rarely in centuries. After millions of people have come and gone, so one cannot depend on it. It cannot be made a principle. It is so exceptional. It only proves the rule. It does not discredit the rule. The rule remains the same, that it is a transmission of lamp from master to the disciple. It can go on being transmitted for thousands of years. Just the master, before he transmits it, has to be clear that the disciple will be able to carry it. I will tell you a small anecdote. In the Zen history of beautiful incidents, inexhaustible, one great Chinese Zen master was ready to leave the body. So he called the gathering of the monks. He had two wings, each wing having 500 monks. So all 1,000 monks gathered, and he told them that this week sometime, I am going to leave the body. I have not decided the day because I have to choose the person to whom to transmit the flame. So my method of choosing is that just before my hut, whoever thinks that he is capable of receiving the flame should write a sentence that describes the essence of Zen. In those 1,000 monks, there were few very eminent scholars. Everybody thought that these people, one of these 4, is bound to win the game. We know much, but in a single sentence, the very essence, and the master is not an ordinary master, you cannot deceive him. Even the scholars were not ready to expose themselves, because it is a great exposure if he says that this is not the right thing. But one scholar who was the most famous in the monastery and the surroundings went in the middle of the night just to hide that nobody knows that he has written. And he wrote a beautiful piece. That ordinarily will be accepted. He said, "No mind and the revelation of the Buddha is the essence of Zen. You cannot say anything against it. The poor fellow have done quite well." But in the morning, the master, when he saw, he said, "Who is the idiot? Catch hold of him, because he has not signed his name. Out of fear, the scholar has not signed his name." He was waiting that if the master appreciates it, he will come out. If he does not appreciate, he cannot find amongst 1,000 sannyasins who is the person who has written it. He told his attendant to clean the wall. It was a great discussion all over the monastery that this is strange. This sentence was clearly showing the very essence of Zen, no mind, the discovery of the Buddha. This is the essence of Zen. Just as it was discussed, it was so tremendously important, who is going to be the successor. 2 monks were discussing it while passing a monk who has been there for 20 years doing nothing but cleaning rice for the monastery. From the early morning he will get up till late night. It was not easy job for 1,000 monks to prepare rice. 20 years before, when he was young, he has come to the master. And the master looked into his eyes and said, "If you really want to be here, just keep few things clear. Never come again to me. Just go to the kitchen. The man who used to work for the rice is dead. So you take his place. From morning till night, just clean the rice, prepare the rice, you are not to participate into any sermons, into any meditations, listening to any scriptures, strange conditions. A man comes to the monastery to know the truth, not to prepare the rice. But the man said, once I have accepted you, my master, whatever you say is my way. You will never see my face again, unless you come to me. And 20 years is a long time. And the whole monastery was almost become unaware of the poor monk. Because who takes care of a man whose whole work is just to prepare rice day after day, year after year? He is not a scholar, he does not discuss with anybody, he does not talk with anybody, he has no friends. He was accepted almost like an automatic machinery. Nobody took any notice of him. But that morning, the master came to the man, looked into his eyes again, and said, can you improve upon this? No mind, discovering the Buddha, this is the very essence of Zen. He laughed. He said, some idiot must have done it. I have heard just people walking here and there discussing about it. What is your idea? The master said. He said, no mind, no Buddha. Pure nothingness. And what is the need to say that this is the essence of Zen? It is. But no mind, no Buddha. The master accepted him as his successor, gave him his robe, his staff, that is traditional in Zen, and told him to run away from the monastery as fast as he can. Because 1,000 enemies I am creating for you. They would like to kill you, because they think that rice monk, that idiot who never uttered a single word, so he took the robe and the staff, but he told the master, because you are saying, I am doing it, otherwise I am not interested in being a successor. Just these 20 years has been such a silence. What can you think From morning to night, no talk with anybody, no world. Just cleaning the rice, preparing the rice. Everything has disappeared. And I say to you that when mind disappears completely, the very idea that I am a Buddha also disappears, because that is part of the mind, the last part, only nothingness. I am not interested, but if you say, I will take the robe and the staff, but I want you to know that if anybody asks me to give the robe and the staff, I'm not going to resist. I will simply give it. Who cares? I have come home. Now it does not matter whether I am a leader of a great monastery, thousands of monks, and great fame and respectability, it does not matter. I am fulfilled unto myself, just cleaning the rice, leave me alone. But the master insisted that you have to take, because there is nobody else to whom I can transmit the lamp. The whole monastery laughed about it. But they had to accept the rice monk, as he has become known. They have never seen him, they have never bothered about him. For the first time they saw his presence is far greater than the master. His silence far deeper than the master, almost tangible. You can touch his silence. You can feel around him a different kind of energy, a different vibe. You can look into his eyes. Nobody tried to take the robe or staff, because he was willing. He assembled the assembly and told them that I have been chosen the successor. This is the robe and the staff. If anybody is interested, he can take it. But the very interest will show that he is not the right person. The very motivation, the desire to power, will show that he is not the right person. But still I will give it to him, because I don't want to be bothered by all kinds of things about the monastery. I am perfectly happy, I will go back to the kitchen. But the monks realized that they have been wrong about the poor fellow. He is not poor. He is the richest monk, although he knows nothing of his scripture. But because he dropped with no mind, also the Buddha, he shows his insight that the moment you drop the mind, everything is dropped. You disappear just like a ripple in the lake, not leaving a trace behind. Once you rouse yourself from your dream state, however you find that you are in your own bed, and realize that the only way you could have got home was to awaken yourself. The example is right. But it very rarely happens. When you wake up, most of you find in somebody else's bed. To be true, it is very rare that you find you are in your own bed. Most of the people get up and go home. Who is at home? If you were at home, then even the possibility of the dream does not exist. You have been traveling all along life after life. Even if you manage somehow accidentally to bypass your home, you will not recognize it. Because you have gone out of it for so long, that even the memory, the remembrance, has to be hit on your head that this is your home, what you are looking for, where are you going? A master is almost an absolute necessity. You are not gone very far away from the home. However far you may have gone, it is not very far. Just you need a magnetic force to pull you back. The master is only a magnetic force. He says nothing. But without saying, the magnet pulls. He describes the home so that you can recognize it when you have come close to it. He describes the experiences that will happen on the way back home, the blissfulness, the peace, the silence, the ecstasy, the utter relaxation. He describes everything just to remember that when you come closer to home, these things will start happening. And they will help you to find the home. Without the master, without someone who has already reached his home and knows what kind of experiences happen on the path, it is almost impossible to wake up on your own . This kind of spiritual awakening is called return to the origin or rebirth in paradise. It is the kind of inner realization that can be achieved with some training. Virtually, who like Zazen and make an effort in practice, be they laymen or monks, can experience to this degree, but even such partial awakening cannot be attained except through the practice of Zazen. You would be making a serious error, however, were you to assume that this was true enlightenment, in which there is no doubt about the nature of reality. You would be like a man who, having found copper, gives up the search for gold. Basvi seems to be a man who is awakened, but is not articulate enough to transfer in words what he has experienced. There have been three kinds of masters. The first kind never speaks, knowing perfectly well that he is not articulate to use words for a wordless experience. It is better to be silent than to say anything that is not rightly directing to the moon. He knows his incapacity. He remains silent. He is called the Arhata. He has conquered the enemy. Arhata means one who has conquered the enemy, the ignorance, the unconsciousness, but who is not capable to transmit the lamp to anyone else. The second category is of the Bodhisattva, who is articulate enough to manage words in such a way that they start indicating towards something beyond the words, who is capable to use arbitrary devices so that you can become awakened. The third category has not been recognized in the ancient scriptures anywhere, but I want you to know that Basui belongs to the third category. It would have been better for him to be silent and be an arhat, rather than being silent, he is trying to be a bodhisattva. That's why he is committing so many mistakes, although he knows, but he is not able to express it or even to indicate it in a correct and adequate way. This category has not been recognized. But certainly there have been many, and I will tell you who are the people who belong to this category. Better it would have been for them to remain silent as arhatas, but perhaps out of compassion, they tried their best, but intentions don't matter. The expression is childish. They cannot be bodhisattvas. All their words are borrowed. Although they have the experience, so I will not call them the teacher. But it is strange that their category has not been recognized separately. Perhaps very rarely people have tried the way Basui is trying. With all good intentions, with compassion, but he is not capable. You may have good intentions, but that does not mean you can play on a guitar. You may have all good intentions, but that does not mean you can dance. It needs a totally different quality. A certain genius which is missing. But whatever he is saying is more or less true, but not very sharp like a sword, cutting all that is false in a single blow. A very mild kind of bodhisattva, lukewarm bodhisattva. Let us call this new category lukewarm bodhisattva. Rayo Khan wrote, without a jot of ambition left, I let my nature flow where it will. There are 10 days of rice in my bag, and by the hearth a bundle of firewood. Who prattles of illusion or nirvana, forgetting the equal dust of name and fortune, listening to the night rain on my roof of my hut, I sit at ease, both legs stretched out. Now, this is a sharp sword-like man saying things clearly without a jot of ambition. I let my nature flow where it will. No direction, no destiny. I give my nature total freedom. There are 10 days of rice in my bag, enough. Who lives with certainty more than 10 days? And if nature has taken care up to now, it will take care after 10 days. So I don't collect, it is enough. And by the hearth, a bundle of firewood. What a richness! What a contentment in utter poverty. Even kings will be jealous of this man. Who prattles of illusion or nirvana, and who bothers that whether I am awakened or not awakened? Whether I am in illusion, in dream, or in nirvana, in awakening, who prattles? Forgetting the equal dust of name and fortune, all is dust of name and fortune, listening to the night rain on the roof of my hut. Both legs stretched out, relaxed, listening to the dance of the rain on the roof. This is a right way of expressing the unexpressible. He is expressing utter relaxation, no concern even about nirvana. So silent, he's saying that I sit at ease, both legs stretched out. As if time has ceased, nothing matters. This is the space you can call you have come home. Dozen wrote, "The world, moonlit drops shaken from the crane's bill, just a watcher, sitting silently, watching the world, the moonlit drops shaken from the crane's bill. Nothing to do, nowhere to go, just silently to watch the whole drama." Ananda has asked, "What is it to be original? Is the awakened man the man of Zen, the only truly original man?" Ananda, to be original simply means, just as you were born fresh, uncluttered by any garbage, theology, religion, politics, etiquette, manners, as you grow up, around you much garbage grows. The society helps to grow it. The whole educational system exists to support it. By the time you are young enough, you have already lost your original home. You know too much, but you don't know anything in fact. You pretend too much. You may even believe in your pretensions, but that does not make them true. The whole society up to now has been creating hypocrites. The original man is just the polar opposite of the hypocrite. He is simply natural, unpredictable. The hypocrite is predictable. You know what he is going to do. His reactions, his responses, you know his future. Because he is a false entity, not a living plant. You cannot predict in what direction the branches will go, on what branches the flowers will come. Everything is unpredictable. But with a plastic plant, everything is known and predictable. And society wants you to be predictable. Because its whole business depends on predictability. The day I entered America, the immigration department asked the first question to me, Are you an anarchist? I have been told beforehand that anarchists are not allowed in America. I told the man I'm something more. He said, my God, for something more there is no regulation. He has his book open, communists, anarchists are not allowed, but something more. He looked at me and he said, you look something more. But you will be in trouble and you will create trouble for us. I said, I am a silent man. I don't leave even my room. He said, that is the danger. But because in the rules there is no provision of preventing something more than the anarchist, I have to allow you. And from that very moment the struggle began that lasted for 5 years. The original man is simply a natural man. Not nurtured by the society. He has kept himself aloof and individual. He has not allowed anybody to condition him. My father used to go to the temple to listen to the monks and to the priests of Jainism. And he will ask me, you are sitting here uselessly. Why don't you come with me? I said, you are going in search of something which I have found. He said, it is very difficult to talk with you. I said, it is. He persuaded me many times that a very good learned scholar monk is speaking today in the temple. I said, it does not matter who is speaking in the temple. In my temple there is absolute silence. And learning is all rubbish. But my grandfather was a different kind of man. When my father was gone to the temple, he will say, now come on, let us have a little fun. He was old, but very childlike. He will provoke me that let us disturb the meeting. With my age, it does not look right. But I will be your protector. And he was one of the aged persons in the community. So he said, you don't be worried. You just create as much chaos as possible. I will not support you directly, but I will be there to see that no harm is done to you. I said, that's okay. And then my father would see me that I have come with the grandfather. And then he will become afraid that now any small questions will create trouble. Those learned monks, and I will stand up in the middle, and people will start shouting that, don't stand in the middle, and my grandfather will say, he will stand. Nobody can stop my child from asking a relevant question. And I used to ask all kinds of questions which those poor fellows were not able to answer. Just small things. In Jainism, a woman cannot go into ultimate freedom. And if the man was talking about that, I will ask him, how do you know? Are you a woman? He will look here and there, some support. On what grounds you say that a woman cannot enter heaven? All that he could say, it is written in the scripture. I said, then it is not your experience. Have you been to heaven? Have you seen that there is no woman? He said, my God, nobody has asked about this. And nobody comes back from heaven. Then I said, who has written that scripture? Somebody who has not gone to heaven writes that a woman cannot enter heaven, and you are repeating it like a parrot. Finished, poor fellow's learnedness, and my grandfather will take hold of me and say, child, let us go. Back home, my father will say, I had asked you to come. That time you were talking great philosophy. Why you went with the grandfather? I said, I never deny him, he's so old. And I want him, Otherwise, you would have been preventing me. In His presence, you cannot prevent me. And I don't trust that you will go against the so-called manners of your society. I trust Him. In fact, He is a revolutionary. He used to take me to other religions meeting, but he was so old and respected by the community. But seeing me with him, everybody became nervous that something is going to happen. These both fellows should not be seen together. And he was always ready whenever I will find that something is happening. Somebody is talking about God. I will tell him that it is not a time to waste. You are tired, but you have to come because alone I am too small, and they will all start shouting at me and trying to silence me. He said, don't be worried. As long as I am alive, nobody can stop you from asking questions. The basic purpose of these assemblies is to find out, to inquire, to question. And the man who was speaking on God, I will ask him, have you seen God with your own eyes? He will look all around. I said, are you looking for witnesses? Put your hand on your heart and in the name of God, be truthful. Have you seen God? And in a temple, these poor believers, they cannot lie. And he will say, no, I have not seen. I believe in God. I said, believe means nothing. One can believe in anything. You have some nerve to talk about God without seeing Him. Have you heard that He is sick? He will say, I have never heard such a thing. God and sick. I said, why not? I was just preparing you for the bad news. He said, what do you mean? I said, Friedrich Nietzsche says God is dead. Can your belief protect God from dying? And all this lecturing about God and not knowing even ABC of experience, you are fooling and cheating people. And then everybody will fall silent, and my grandfather will say, the work is done. He will never come to this town again. And it used to happen that those people never came again, knowing perfectly well that I will be there. When I left the town and went to the university, I used to come in holidays. My grandfather used to say, I miss you very much, because those old idiots, knowing that you are not here, have started coming back. And I'm too old to create disturbance. You were a great help to me, because I want to destroy all these nonsense beliefs. One should either know or should know that he does not know. The original man is simply a natural man who has survived the conditioning of the society, the manners of the society, who has asked everything before accepting anything, who has inquired into the truth of anything before accepting it. He is never a hypocrite. The Zen man certainly is the original man. It is the search for the original man. Your very nature, where you are not a man, not a woman, not a Hindu, not a Christian, where you simply are, unfettered freedom, unscratched sky, the beauty of it and the benediction of it is infinite. Now the time for some really original man. Sardar Gurdayal Singh got the point. He always gets it before anybody else. He is a bodhisattva. Paddy is in town for a big party at the Wonky Donkey pub. By 5 in the morning, Paddy has had enough. He leaves the party and makes his way back to his hotel. Staggering around, he climbs up 3 flights of stairs before he remembers that there is an elevator pulling open the elevator door, Paddy steps into the open elevator shaft and falls straight to the basement. Shakily he stands up, brushes himself off and adjusts his cap. "Damn it," Paddy shouts, "I said up!" Olga Kovalevsky wakes up late one morning. Her hair is full of curlers. Her eyes are puffy, and her face had a mud pack on from the night before. She plods downstairs to the kitchen in an old house coat and a worn out pair of carpet slippers, looking blearily out of the kitchen window. Olga sees that the garbage truck is about to move on up the street. She grabs her bag of garbage, dashes out of the house, and races up to one of the garbage men panting, "Am I too late?" "Yes, Olga." "No, lady," replies the man, "just jump in." Zabriskie calls for his little son Albert and gives him $5. "Albert," he says, "go to the store and get 3 pounds of butter." Albert dashes off, grabbing the family dog, Buko, to take along with him. On the way to the grocer's, Albert passes his favorite sweet shop and gets a better idea what to do with the money. He runs into the candy store and buys sweets. Afterwards, he sneaks back home and hides the chocolates under his bed. Then little Albert puts on a sad face and goes to see his father. "What happened?" asks Zabriskie. "Where is the butter?" "The dog," says little Albert, pointing to Buko. "That son of a bitch snatched the butter away from me and ate it all up." Zabriskie grabs the little dog and puts him up on the weighing scale. The scale indicates exactly 3 pounds. Zabriskie scratches his bullock head, turns to little Albert and says, "Well, there is the butter. Now where is the head, the dog?" Now Nivedana. feel your body to be frozen. Close your eyes and all the doors that open outwards. Gather your life energy withinwards. Move as deep as possible. There is waiting your real being, the Buddha. Rejoice this moment, the experience of being a Buddha. The clouds overhead are very heavy. Deeper and deeper, so the memory becomes engraved. With the reality of your being, essentially everyone is a Buddha. It is only a question of remembering it. To make the perception more clear, Nividana, relax. Drop the body, drop the mind, drop everything, just remain a watcher. This witnessing is the ultimate experience of life. Because it opens the doors of miracles. The first miracle is it makes you aware of your originality. It takes away all the dust that has gathered upon your mirror. It washes away all thoughts and leaves behind only the original man. The original man is the Buddha. They are synonymous. Remember your natural self. Twenty-four hours silently running like an undercurrent in all your activities. Never lose track of your original being. And you have found eternity, and you have found divinity, and you have found all the treasures of the world to be natural, to be original, is just to be in tune with existence, and slowly, even this much separation disappears. You are not in tune, you are no more. Only a great universe is, with all its ecstasy, with all its joy, with all its blessings. Vedana. Come back, but don't come back as your old self. Come back with this new originality, with this new natural. Sit down for a few minutes, just rejoicing the fact of your Buddhahood, of your original man. Can we celebrate the 10,000 Buddhas gathered here?
Yes.